In this episode of Justice in Motion, we are talking to emerging social justice filmmaker Kasia Sequoia Slavna. We hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome to Justice in Motion, the Social Justice Film Report. I'm your host, Daniel Swan. With the world being in such a state of flux at the moment, hopefully moving towards a much more positive future, we at the Social Justice Film Institute thought it would be a great time to highlight some emerging filmmakers. Making a film is something that many people will tell you requires a lot of experience, learning the ways of the force from a wise old sage. But there are a lot of young people out there with a burning desire and a story to tell who are happy just to grab a camera and get stuck in, often with fantastic results. We have the Youth Visions Prize at the Social Justice Film Festival every single year for that very reason. And one previous winner of that prize is our wonderful interviewee today. I was lucky enough to kick this Emerging Filmmakers initiative off by speaking to Kasia Sequoia Slavna, whose film Sunrise Storyteller won our Gold Youth Visions Prize at the festival back in 2017. Since then, she's become a public speaker, an educator, and a writer, all towards the goal of a brighter tomorrow. It's worth mentioning, I think, that this interview was recorded before the death of George Floyd. But let's hear that interview now. Kasia Sequoia Slavna, emerging filmmaker and social justice activist. Well, thank you so much, Kasia, for taking the time to speak with me and to speak with the Justice in Motion podcast today. How is the lockdown going for you?
I'm thankful that my routine hasn't changed too much. I guess I've kind of been working for myself since I was 15 or 16. So I'm used to getting what I need to do done at home, but it has been kind of strange because I'm in the very early stages of starting a new film project.
Oh, fantastic.
And I was hoping to get into the field and start, producing a demo of sorts. And of course that's on hold right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the future of film is looking a little bit uncertain, as is everybody's, future. And personally, I think that, the biggest problem has been struggling with anxiety about the fate of the world and how we're going to move forward beyond this crisis into hopefully cultivating a more equitable world for everybody.
This is it. Absolutely. We like to, on Justice in Motion, like to, because it's something that has a huge amount of definitions, it's always interesting for me when I'm speaking to people about these kind of issues to ask, what does social justice mean to you? How would you define it for you?
When I hear the word social justice, I think about equity for all. So mm-hmm. like to advocate for equality in our field of social justice, but I think what's really necessary is equity. So providing those opportunities for people who don't have access to them, providing justice, providing access to education in a way that lifts people up so that we can then be equal, I guess that's kind of the basics of equity. And it's not just related to, I think, social. I think environmental justice is very tied into social justice because climate change creates a whole bunch of social inequalities. Mm-hmm. And I could go on and on about that because I really care about the way climate affects the issue of peace and climate refugees becoming a bigger issue as we go further into the climate crisis. But those are just some of the things that I care
nice.
About.
No, absolutely. It's a very difficult question. So I like to get it out of the way early. So
yeah.
The equity and kind of telling the stories of people who really fight for that equity is a huge part of Sunrise Storyteller. And when I watched that film, and obviously, this project that Social Justice Film Institute is looking at the moment is emerging filmmakers, is kind of younger filmmakers. In terms of your age, obviously, how old were you when you made that film?
So we left on my 16th birthday. And by the time I was done with it, the editing process, I was 18.
Wow. Okay. Were there, any situations within the making of the film, and I think good and bad, that you look at and think, if you'd been older, it wouldn't have happened in the same way?
I think that if I had been older when I had done it, I probably wouldn't have done it, if it makes sense.
Okay, interesting. What do you mean by that?
Because I was so naive to how much work it would take to get done. And then I committed to it and taken people's money to go travel and get it done. So had I been older, being a little bit more jaded and a little bit more afraid of what people think, it just wouldn't have gotten done. It was like, it was almost too late now.
Yeah.
Also because what I was trying to share through the film was more important than any of the kind of anxieties or worries that I might have struggled with throughout the process. I was lucky that I got to start it so young, and that I had the privilege to take a year out of school and fundraise to do this and take the time to travel.
Yeah.
Because that is a privilege, and I definitely want to acknowledge that.
Absolutely, absolutely. You mentioned the fundraising, and obviously that's, you know, regardless of however old you are as a filmmaker, that's the thing that kind of crops up for everybody. And you did it through crowdsourcing, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What was your experience with that? How did you kind of traverse that very kind of multi-layered way of raising cash?
Yeah, that was a full-time job, and we did it three times over because we left, my mom and I left for our trip without all the money to return home. So we did two from the road.
Wowzers.
And we were like doing perks in our spare time, like from a random co-working space or a random office, we got to send out our thank you cards to our donors this week. We gotta take aside some travel, like some time from, you know, actually filming to make sure that we hold up our end of the deal, which is of course with crowdsource funding, providing perks of some sort.
As if you didn't have enough to be thinking of in terms of making the actual film, you got to start. Yeah.
Yeah.
What platform did you use?
We used Indiegogo.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, that was really good because it was flexible. We could, you pay a higher percentage if you decide to keep all the money.
Okay.
Versus Kickstarter, it's either all or nothing. You raise all your money or you lose it all.
Okay. Okay. So. That's interesting. Were there things that you visited that for time constraints or whatever had to be kind of cut out of the final film?
Yeah, that was a struggle because I was also learning how to make a film. Like I didn't know enough about, you know, collecting enough B-roll or backing up all your footage.
Sure.
So when I went out, I might meet somebody for a couple hours, and it wasn't enough to, although they had a great story, it wasn't enough to support a storyline in the film.
Yeah.
So I did end up interviewing about 30 people in my 6 months.
Oh, wow.
But in the final film, there are 7 stories, just because they were the most compelling in the way that I was able to follow them and flesh out their stories and the way that they kind of fit together. Every single story that I documented, there was that thread of resilience, hope, and determination. Like those were the three themes that I found in everybody's stories, although they were so unique and the focuses of each issue was very different. Mm. But yeah, it was just a lack of time for some of them.
And a lack of kind of resources as well. It's one of the things that hit me when watching it again yesterday. It was in Tanzania and the guys who were there were talking to your mum, I think. And I was like, oh, isn't that interesting that they're talking to their mum and not you? But then I thought, well, it's got to be you behind the... Because it was just the two of you, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was just the two.
And so that's like the most bare bones way of making a film possible. I mean, that must have brought with it so many challenges in terms of who's doing what, and how did you kind of navigate that in terms of deciding who is going to be covering each role in the film?
So I was the only person, I was the only camera person.
Oh, wow. So your mum didn't film any of it?
There were some hurdles with that. One being you have to film horizontally, landscape mode versus... So we got home and, you know, I was reviewing a lot of the footage and there would be times where she tried to film me in the process of making the film.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't, we couldn't use it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So yeah, I was the only camera person, sound person. My mom has just kind of got the role of producer.
Yeah.
You know, she's great at making connections with people. So I think that she sometimes would also hop in on interviews with me. But, you know, she was great at booking accommodations and, you know, helping us find our next place in our travels. And that was her role, was like the logistics person.
A very important person as well. And especially with kind of, I know that I found that a lot in kind of growing up and trying to do creative things, that if it's a room full of just creative people, nothing gets done. You need that kind of logistical person to say, right, okay, yeah, but what, like, let's actually work out the logistics of this. Very, very important.
Yeah.
So in terms of, like, you were talking about backing up your footage, you were talking about B-roll. Are there any kind of practical tips that you might give to people?
It's the most cliche thing. But I'm still learning it, is shoot more than you think you need, because like I personally get so immersed with just spending time with the person while I'm there that sometimes I forget to be active in the creative process too. It's like, you know, I either devote myself to like getting to know the person, or, you know, I'm all in shooting, and it's finding the perfect combination of the two. And making sure that the way that you feel when you're with that person is translated in your film through the footage that you're able to collect.
Fantastic. So kind of moving on a little bit from the film and into kind of more general topics. Obviously, at the moment, we're in a time where you speak to anybody on the street and you say, name an activist, they're going to name Greta Thunberg. They're going to name this kind of this teenage girl from Sweden. There's, you know, Malala Yousafzai, Emma Gonzalez, and all the kind of kids from Parkland. Even in your film, Michaela Dampis and Alina Nanji. So many of the most kind of notable or kind of most visible, at least, activists that are really working and campaigning today are young people. Why do you think that is?
I think that young activists are bringing themselves to the forefront of these really important movements because there's a lack of representation of our voices in the places where decisions are being made. So if we are being maybe not shut out, but in certain administrations, you know, voices are being silenced or just not given the platform to speak, young people are taking it upon themselves to make their own platforms to speak out on these issues and hold adults accountable. Because, like, I don't think that we were ever really, you know, called on to raise our voices. We just raised our voices because we care so much and because we can't stand to see the future, our time being wasted.
Absolutely.
When we have a very limited time frame to make sustainable and lasting change for the future. And there's a lot on our shoulders right now, and that feeling of anxiety and overwhelm, and I think those feelings just weigh so heavy that it's almost like young people can't not do anything about it.
Okay. That's interesting. I like that a lot. And obviously the benefit of all these young people kind of getting into activism so young is that you've got a lot of time in the future to achieve things. When you look at yourself, when you think of the future, what are some of the goals that you kind of personally have in terms of your activism, in terms of the great work that you're doing?
My three focus areas for my activism have always been peace, climate action, and gender equality. And the three go very well together. Are very interlinked.
Okay.
As is, you could argue every issue is kind of interlinked, but I feel like those three are very much aligned.
Mm-hmm.
So my focus is, I guess, expressing those through my next film projects. And as a filmmaker, I don't want to just make inspirational content. I want to generate inspiration into action.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's like a distinct call to action in a film or a workshop and resources afterward that young people especially can engage with.
Fantastic.
Or social media campaigns advocating for political or policy changes. Like, those are all things that I want to work on as a filmmaker activist.
Sure. You mentioned social media there. Obviously, that's something that's very kind of closely tied in with a lot of these kind of young activists and young kind of social justice filmmakers. What do you think that that's going to continue to be the case? Do you think that's going to continue to obviously play a huge role kind of in the fights to in the future for social justice?
Mm-hmm, definitely. I think that before COVID, I would have said, you know, social media is a great tool,
mm-hmm.
but try not to get into slacktivism, which is obviously only using social media for your activism. But now we're in a completely different space.
Yeah.
And we have to look at the ways in which we can make social media activism more effective.
Okay.
And I think that that is, I'm seeing like in my personal spaces that people are having, I guess, obviously webinars are popular, but, you know, online protests mm-hmm. of sorts or petitions. I'm seeing more petitions coming up. I'm seeing a lot of activist groups talking about how they can lobby their government for things like universal basic income is something that we're talking about in Canada, or lowering the voting age
mm-hmm.
is something that's also come up lately. Talking about like post-COVID world and what that's going to look like and how we can advocate for those policy changes now so that we can hopefully transition to a more equitable future. It's a really important time for that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more when you look at the fact that this has put hit the pause button on so many different things. You think, well, we're never going to have a better opportunity, really. The powers that be would say, well, we'd need to stop the entire infrastructure in order to put that in place. And like, well, actually, that's happening right now. So maybe we should, yeah, look to, like you say, kind of pushing forward and trying to find out, you know, if there's a better version of that moving forward. Now, you mentioned at the beginning something that I've been very diligent and very restrained in not asking about, but you were talking about an upcoming film project that you're at the beginning of, which has tantalized me no end, and I'm sure tantalized the other listeners. How much can you tell us about that? What kind of area is that? And when might we be able to see it, obviously COVID notwithstanding?
So I'm in development for the next film. So really what I've been focusing on is applying for grants, and
of course,
I'm taking definitely a more traditional approach to fundraising.
Okay.
And development, and going through hopefully production within the next little while.
Okay.
I don't know what that will be like. But all I can say about it at the moment is that it's focusing on the sustainable development goal that's kind of orphaned and not talked about very much, which is number 16, peace.
Yeah.
As a peace advocate, it's very important to me. And, you know, I know that that's very broad. I do have a more specific focus, but we will be announcing the project within the next 2 months.
Oh, fantastic.
So once that's out, I can share it with your network.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Hopefully everybody listening.
Sure, sure. So in terms of moving into this new project, you mentioned kind of fundraising in a slightly different way as a lesson that you've learned from Sunrise Storyteller. Are there other kind of lessons that you're kind of able to implement into this project to go about things in a slightly different way than Sunrise Storyteller?
So I feel like my last film was kind of almost reverse engineered in a way. Like, I just kind of did everything backwards and put things together and
okay.
in a way that I knew how to at the time, which was, I didn't really know much, obviously. This time around, I'm learning more. It's like I'm learning how to make a film all over again.
Sure.
You know, when I went out into the field last time, it was very much, I'm just going to go and see what I find. This time, I have to be a little bit more meticulous about my story structure,
okay,
my
good.
Intentions for the film, what it's actually gonna look like.
Mm.
That being said, I don't want to make it something that
mm-hmm.
I have my entire message out, like laid out for me before I go into the film, because I have seen films that have been made like that.
Mm-hmm.
I still very much want the story to be open to for the characters and for the people who are at the center of it to be the ones telling the stories.
Yeah.
I never want to like just go out and tell people stories. Like, I want them to speak for themselves.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a very different way of going about things, pitching materials, all that. I'm learning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As are we all. And it's an interesting thing you mentioned there in terms of making documentaries, of, again, it's finding that balance between this is what I want to do, but I can't, but I need to be open to things that are going to happen. Like you say, there's so many documentaries out there that you learn afterwards, like, well, this wasn't the plan for what the film was going to be, but it just kind of happened in front of us. So that must be a difficult balance to try and fix, especially at this early stage when you're in kind of preparation for it.
Yeah, it's something that I'm learning how to balance, like you said. And it is difficult to find funding,
yeah,
because, you know, they really want to know what your film's going to look like beginning to end. And, you know, I haven't identified that yet.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to craft a story that I can share from my heart, what I feel like it's going to look like. But again, that's never, it's up to fate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Say, this is what the film's going to be, with a little asterisk at the end that says, unless it isn't.
Yeah.
Unless something happens during the filming and we change it all completely. You mentioned there in terms of documentaries that you've seen, are there kind of filmmakers or documentary makers whose work is kind of influencing you, and films that you watch and you think, God, yeah, something like that would really be what I'm going for?
I have an executive producer on the project.
Oh, that's good.
She's a Canadian filmmaker. She does a lot of environmental documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admire her way of storytelling. I recently watched one of her documentaries, which released. Just give me one second.
No, yeah, go for it.
Am I allowed to say? Okay. I am allowed to say her name. I had to ask my producer.
The lawyers have said, yep, they've given me the thumbs up, we're all good.
So her name is Liz Marshall.
Okay.
And she recently just released a film called Meet the Future, which is about a company in the US who is making meat from stem cells. And the process of creating something like that and making it accessible, but also like the lobbying that goes on with people who are, you know, factory farmers or who are just kind of keeping the status quo of meat production, which is obviously very unsustainable.
Yeah.
I like the way that she follows a story from beginning to end, and you really get to know the characters.
Okay.
I like that, which is something that I haven't personally done myself, because my film has been like segmented stories.
Right.
So it's something that I'd like to delve more into in terms of style in the future.
Yeah.
I also like films that make you think. They're not like, obviously documentaries make you think, but that are kind of controversial. I recently watched like Netflix's The Rachel Divide, which is about Rachel Dolezal, the woman who believes she is African American.
Yes.
And it just, the way that it tells a story from a way that you might want to empathize with her, but also see the problems with her way of thinking and see her struggle with that divide in her own mind and people's opinions. And because it's for, I guess, you as an audience member to make up your mind about how you feel about the subject. It's not an agenda. Like, it didn't feel like it had an agenda necessarily. It was very like open to you. Take the information, see what you think about it.
Yeah.
And that was something that was interesting to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like that must be a very difficult thing for a lot of documentary filmmakers who are obviously, you know, they're going into this is a documentary project about Rachel Dolezal. And they've got already in their head all these ideas, and but being able to kind of separate yourself from that and put those to one side and say, right, well, what are the facts here? What's the actual story? I think must be very difficult, almost in that kind of nature documentary kind of way of, I'm just going to present this. This is what's happening. And then you as the audience have to make your mind up. It must be very difficult.
Yeah, those are just some of the things that I've been enjoying recently.
Nice.
It's always changing, and I'm always taking inspiration from everything that I see.
Yeah.
But my instinct as a filmmaker is to focus on solution-oriented storytelling.
Nice. And then finally, to kind of wrap it all up, we in the Social Justice Film Festival, we like to screen films of a social justice nature because they're interesting and because they, you know, they teach you a little bit about the world that maybe you didn't necessarily know before. But we like screening films that are, as you mentioned before, a call to action. So from this particular kind of conversation that we've had, from this particular podcast that we've just created, from the people listening, what kind of call to action would you ideally like for them? What would you want them to do after turning off this podcast and like, right, I need to X? What would that be?
That's a really good question. I feel like if you're not already familiar with the Sustainable Development Goals, familiarize yourself with them.
Lovely.
Choose one issue, one or two that you like really care about. And they have some very specific like frameworks and targets for action. Take on maybe one that you think that you can devote yourself to. I think we often, like it's so compelling to take on every single issue that's hot or I guess kind of pressing at the moment, but everybody has their own unique cause that they can really dedicate specific skills to. And if you're really passionate about one specific cause, then I believe that you can make a very profound impact. And some people are meant to be kind of like bumblebees, floaters, but I think that it takes away some of the pressure of getting involved in activism if you feel like you don't have to change every single thing that is kind of pressing. Because I care about so many issues, but I choose to devote my time to the places where I'm connected with organizations that I care deeply about, or, you know, I have specific calls to action for myself because I feel like that's the best way that I can make an impact. So I hope that helps people.
That's great. That's really interesting. The idea of three people who care about three issues are not going to be as effective as three people who each care very diligently about one issue and pick it and really kind of go to bat for it. That's really interesting. I like that a lot. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your pre-production. You kind of slightly interrupted pre-production. Yeah, very, very interesting talking to you. And I'm sure I could talk to you for hours more, but we have to leave it there. But yeah, thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you very much for listening to this episode of Justice in Motion. I hope it's inspired a couple of young people to pick up a camera and tell some stories. As Kasia proves, there's no rules against it, and in this time of powerful social change, there is no shortage of stories waiting to be told. We'll be speaking to more emerging filmmakers in the upcoming months, so make sure you're subscribing to Justice in Motion wherever you get your podcast so you don't miss out. And keep an eye and an ear out this month for a special event around a film that we screened in 2018, Change in the Family, a much-needed portrayal of biracial, trans, and gender non-conforming lives in America. The documentary chronicles the transition of Zoe Thorpe and the sympathetic response of his family. We'll have an online screening of the film and a discussion with the director and hopefully the subject of the film as well. It'll be happening on June 17th, and all details can be found at facebook.com/Social Justice Film Festival. Until next time, watch films, be fair to each other, and I'll speak to you soon. This episode was written by Marisa Reyes Pacheco and Daniel Swan and was a production of the Social Justice Film Institute.